Welcome to the NPR Movie Podcast, a weekly roundup of movie love from your friends here at NPR. This week, commentator Sandip Roy offers another take on Slumdog Millionaire. Then we'll delve into a trifecta of business stories about the movies. Laura Seidel looks into whether or not actors will be replaced by digital substitutes. A Talk of the Nation conversation about how we entertain ourselves during these economic difficulties. And we'll have an upbeat story about an indie video store being saved by individual generosity. But first, NPR's Bob Mondello has a pre-Oscar look at the animated and live-action short film nominees.
And now it's time to take a peek at Oscar's shorts. No, not those shorts, but the short films that are up for Academy Awards next weekend. And if you're studying up for your office Oscar pool, you can actually get a look before the big night. Theaters in big cities across the country are showing a collection of the nominees, both the 5 animated shorts and the 5 live-action nominees. NPR's critic extraordinaire Bob Mondello has seen all the shorts, and he's here to tell us about them. Hi there, Bob.
It's good to be here.
So how does the process of making a short film change the storytelling?
Well, I think of it kind of like making a short story as opposed to a novel. In a short story, you can only tell one narrative thread. And so if you have, let's say, 3 minutes for a picture like Octopussy, you can basically tell the story of two octopuses who, I guess that's octopi, isn't it, who are separated. They're lovers. They're in their tank, and one of them is taken off to a seafood restaurant, and the other one decides to rescue it. So it's one chase. After the one is plucked, which happens in the first, 5 seconds of the cartoon, the other one is chasing to try and catch up.
So you have, of course, the animated pictures and then the live-action films.
Right. Well, I mean, you can tell a slightly more complicated story in one of these by use of flashbacks. There's a picture called New Boy that does that.
This is a live-action.
Yes, a live-action picture that is from Ireland, I think. The New Boy, though, is from Africa. He's come to a new school, and he gets picked on there. And as that's happening to him, he's doing flashbacks to his plight in Africa, where his father was actually taken away by soldiers. And in that way, in 10 minutes rather than 3 minutes, you can tell a sort of a second story in there. But it's still basically one drive. You're going in one direction in the story. I think it's really interesting to watch the way that narratives are told. And when you see 10 of them together like this, it can be fascinating.
Yeah. For the first time, there's an animation nominee that the general public probably has seen, and it's called Presto, which was released theatrically alongside Wall-E, which people raved about. So will that make a difference to Oscar voters?
No, it won't make a difference to Oscar voters, but when Pixar makes a movie, it is sort of the gorilla in the room. It's their technical expertise is magnificent. And this story, which is about a magician who has a sort of recalcitrant rabbit in his act, he reaches into his hat and the hand comes out of a different hat and the rabbit keeps moving that hat around and all heck breaks loose on the stage. It's a very, very funny little animated feature.
I've seen this one and I love it.
It's adorable. I mean, it really is. And it's also a very smart piece of filmmaking.
Yes, and we also want to tell people that if they're making their notes for the pool...
I suppose it's going to get a lot of...
pretty good.
Yes, probably.
I won't ask you to predict the winners, though. That would be unfair of our critic. But are there any other films on this list that really appeal to you?
Actually, yes, and the title is going to make it sound awful. It's called Lavatory Love Story.
Mm-hmm. Sounds awful.
It's about a lavatory attendant. She is sweet, and she's reading her newspaper all the time, and somebody comes in and leaves her flowers. And it's just a line drawing, but it's the sweetest little romance where she's trying to figure out who could possibly have left this. And it's very funny, and the water gets splashed, and it's just kind of a wonderful little animated feature.
NPR's movie man, Bob Mondello. You can see the Oscar nominees for Best Animated and Live Action Shorts at about 60 theaters across the country this weekend. Thanks so much, Bob.
Always a pleasure.
The movie Slumdog Millionaire has received 10 Oscar nominations. It's just the latest in a line of movies about India by outsiders who were seduced by Indian culture. As commentator Sandip Roy explains, this one seems very different from its predecessors.
Long before Slumdog, there was another Hollywood movie set in the slums of India. I remember dragging all my American friends to see City of Joy. It starred Patrick Swayze as Dr. Max Lowe. More importantly, it starred my hometown of Calcutta.
Welcome to India.
I knew it was about lepers and slums and rickshaw pullers, but I was willing to look past all that just to see the lanes of my childhood reflected in Hollywood's golden eye. Alas, India was just the means to an end. I realized that as soon as Max Lowe talked to the social worker in Calcutta.
What brings you to India?
I came to find enlightenment.
Oh, and have you found it?
I've been opening the windows and doors of my soul and I haven't seen a damn thing yet.
That movie was about how an American doctor finally got his groove back. Thank you, India. From the white man's burden, we'd become the West's exotic 12-step program of self-discovery. We grew up on a steady diet of Hollywood in India, but we never saw ourselves on the screen. Sure, there was Mowgli, but not too many of us spent our days among wolves and tigers. Of course, India did have another big Hollywood moment. Funnily, like Mowgli, that Indian wore very few clothes.
You don't think we're just going to walk out of India?
Yes. In the end, you will walk out. Because 100,000 Englishmen simply cannot control 350 million Indians if those Indians refuse to cooperate.
Yes, Gandhi. To most of us, Gandhi lived on postage stamps and currency notes. No Indian I knew wanted to grow up to be Gandhi. And I never knew what to say when an American told me, you know, I really admire Gandhi. But it was better to be regarded as saintly like Gandhi than evil like Mola Ram. The blood-curdling priest from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom looked like what Mowgli might have grown up to become if he hadn't found clothes and civilization. He sounded nothing like our old family priest who mumbled his way through the prayers. An Indian who grew up in the U.S. told me that after that film, he wouldn't take any Indian food to school. His classmates were convinced he had monkey brains in his lunchbox. Slumdog Millionaire may be unbelievable, melodramatic, violent, and naive, but it's no Temple of Doom. It might be a British director's passage to an India full of slums, not skyscrapers, but it's still a story about Indians. Finally, Indians get to be the jewel in their own crown.
Commentator Sandeep Roy is an editor with New America Media and host of New America Now on KALW in San Francisco.
At the Academy Awards on Sunday, the movie The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is up for 13 awards. They include nominations for actor Brad Pitt and for special effects. In the case of this movie, the two are not unrelated. In fact, in a third of the movie, it isn't Brad Pitt we see at all, but a computer-generated reproduction. That is NPR's Laura Seidel wondering how much longer it might be before directors and studios try making real-looking characters without real actors.
Benjamin Button is about a child born old who ages backwards.
He's not a well child, so gonna have to take good care of him.
I had 10 children. There's not a baby I can't care for. Let me see him.
Oh, God in heaven. He looks just like my ex-husband.
Actually, he looks like an 80-year-old Brad Pitt whose head is on the body of an infant. Looks like, looks just like, but isn't.
Well, it's not all Brad at all. He's not in any of the shots. There's 325 shots, 52 minutes of the film where there is no actual footage of Brad.
Steve Prieg is with the special effects studio Digital Domain. Essentially, they were able to make a computer-generated copy of Pitt's head and age it digitally. Then Pitt came in and they got the computer-generated head to imitate him. Take the scene where he gets up from a wheelchair in a church and walks.
How old are you?
7, but I look a lot older.
The head on this body is computer-generated, but it really is Pitt's performance, says Digital Domain's Ed Albrick.
Brad decided to do something very different than we had thought he was going to do. He ends up getting this kind of crazy kind of Popeye look on his face, and he's just thrilled, and he's smiling, and he's going through all these emotions, and I don't think it's something that any of us would have thought of or had attempted had Brad not done that.
In the name of God's glory, rise up!
It actually wasn't Brad Pitt rising up, and that is what is so amazing about Benjamin Button. the studio accomplished something that had never been done before in animation. They made a computer-generated person look real. If they had failed, well, it would have been like zombies in the Night of the Living Dead. Zombies are so scary because they are so close to looking human, but they're just a little bit off. That's what computer-generated humans have looked like up till now. The space between zombies and the computer-generated Brad Pitt is something called the uncanny valley. What that means is that when a robot or computer-generated character gets really close to looking human, if it doesn't go all the way, it looks creepy. That's why zombies wig people out, says Digital Domain's Preeg.
Even though they're a lot closer to humans than a primitive robot, people react better to the primitive robot and would rather have that around than a zombie in the house.
That's why it's been a lot easier for Pixar to make a robot named Wally cuddly than it was for Digital Domain to make a believably human reproduction of Brad Pitt. They knew they couldn't get anything wrong. Not a dimple, not a wry smile, not a crease in the forehead, or they were in zombie land.
In fact, we had a hard time hiring people for this show because everyone thought we were going to fail. No one wanted to be associated with a project where we made Brad Pitt look creepy and, you know, $150 million movie goes down the toilet because we made a zombie Brad.
But now that they've done it, gone to the other side of the uncanny valley, much more may be possible. There is no reason that they can't create a believable human character that isn't based on a movie star.
In terms of what we needed to figure out to be there, we are there right now.
Paul Debevic runs the USC Graphics Lab and worked on the Benjamin Button technology.
It's just a matter of a couple more film projects coming through that really refine the technologies, but the genie's out of the bottle.
But animators do need some sort of real human model, says animation supervisor Betsy Peterson.
Most of the animators have a mirror right by their monitor so that as they're working, they kind of make the faces and kind of try to figure out what is that essential thing that really gives you the feeling of the mood or attitude that you're trying to convey.
But it's a lot easier to deal with an animator than a famous movie star and a famous movie star's ego. In fact, they made a movie about this in 2002. It's called Simone. Al Pacino is the harried director Victor Taransky, demanding actress played by Winona Ryder.
It is not the size of the role, Victor. Am I or am I not entitled to the biggest trailer on the lot?
It's the biggest on Earth.
A mad scientist gives Taransky the computer technology to fashion a star out of his own imagination.
I have recreated the infinite nuances of a human being, a human soul.
Well, not so fast, Taransky. It may be harder than you think for a computer to recreate the sultry beauty of Greta Garbo, the brooding presence of a Marlon Brando, or even the winning smile of a Brad Pitt. UCLA acting professor Judith Moreland says when the real Brad Pitt finally showed up a third of the way through The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, she knew.
You could hear the whole audience in the movie theater kind of sigh, one, at just the beauty of Brad Pitt, and also the recognition of actually seeing an entire human being.
Moreland believes a real actor has an ineffable quality, and it isn't necessarily in the dialogue.
I'm always so interested in watching actors think.
Moreland points out George Clooney in Michael Clayton. At the very end of the film, after Clayton has seen his whole world fall apart.
And he gets into the cab, and it's actually happening while the credits are being rolled.
Just drive.
Clooney sits in the cab, his eyes darting over the scenes of New York passing by the windows. He draws in a few deep breaths.
We were enthralled by wondering, what is he thinking? Or I bet he's thinking about this, or look how he's sifting through all this information. I still think that there's something about actually looking at a human being and seeing something real, look back, real human. So it's about that human connection.
Moreland says real human beings have a light in their eyes that she can't imagine a computer could ever recreate. In fact, animators say it is the eyes that are their biggest challenge. Still, now that they've done what was once considered impossible, it's hard to believe they aren't going to try to breathe life into an entirely computer-generated person. Laura Seidel, NPR News.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Congress may have passed an economic stimulus package, but a lot of us still aren't ready to celebrate. We're taking a wait-and-see attitude to this economic situation. And while we're waiting, we're trying to figure out what to do with ourselves. Do we plunk down a bundle of money at the local Cineplex, or do we stay home and watch TV or a DVD, read a book, or surf the web? Just what are we in the mood for these days? We'll find out. The next in our occasional series, Your Life in a Recession, we'll explore leisure time in a recession. What's getting you through the dark days of this recession? And with us on the line now from Beverly Hills, California, is Janine Basinger. She chairs the Film Studies Department at Wesleyan University. Good to have you with us. So, Janine, would you say that the movies people go to see change during difficult economic times?
Well, you know, it's hard to answer that because today people have so much control over what they can see and what they want to see. And we tend to keep comparing that question back to the Depression or to World War II when they had a more limited choice. But, yes, I think that they want films of, well, basically people always want the same thing from the movies: good, cheap, available. And, you know, Hollywood can usually deliver on two of those, cheap and available, but not always on good. But people either want escape or they want reassurance. And so it's kind of fundamental to the same thing that goes on all the time, really, with movie going.
I think the I'm not going to remember them all, but among the top five at the box office this past weekend, I think the number one was Friday the 13th, a sort of teenage slasher movie, a couple of romantic comedies, those kinds of films. Can we construe anything from that, or would those movies have been doing well anyway?
They would have been doing well anyway because the remake of the slasher horror movie is a tried and true format for the teenage or young moviegoer, and they're the people who go out to the movies the most. Now, whether those two romantic movies will last at the box office or not, you know, they probably won't because word of mouth tends to kill these things off. But the slasher movie, that's going to go a few weeks because, you know, it just seems that people like slashing no matter what's going on.
Well, you know, one of the romantic comedies, I haven't seen it, but I'm assuming it was a romantic comedy, is Confessions of a Shopaholic. That is a romantic comedy, isn't it?
Well, if the romance in your life is shopping, yes. I would say yes, but I think so, yes. That's the big if, is how are people going to react to a movie about shopping when, you know, you presumably don't have any money to shop? I mean, that's an interesting question.
What gives us the most choices, of course, these days is the Internet. And Bill Tanser is General Manager of Global Research at Hitwise, and they're an online service that tracks Internet trends. And he's joining us from our Bureau in New York. Good to have you with us, Bill.
Thanks for having me, Lynn.
How's Netflix, how's business doing for Netflix and other movie rental sites?
In terms of online visits, Netflix is actually doing really well. We're seeing an increase for Netflix, a little over 10% over these last couple of months. Now, before I came on, I did a little analysis, and I checked Netflix against movie directory sites, sites like MoviePhone, where you might go to check the movie times of your local theater. Those sites actually down. So it looks like, in terms of Internet users, we're preferring to rent videos online than we rather than actually going to the movie and paying for a movie
ticket.
It's
cheaper.
I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
With all the news about businesses going under, we're happy to talk today about one small business that just got a new lease on life. Crystal Video, a favorite indie video store in Missoula, Montana. It opened in 1987, was bought by a former part-time clerk there, Tim Huffman, in 2003. Well, last Friday, Mr. Huffman announced he would sell his 12,000 film collection and shut down for good. But over the weekend, he found a savior in a local small business owner, Lance Smith. And both men are joining us by phone from Crystal Video in Missoula. And Tim Huffman, let's start with you. Why were you thinking you'd have to shut down?
Well, we were having serious cash flow problems. I had debts that had gone unpaid for a few months, and it didn't look very positive for paying them in the month ahead. And it didn't seem honest to continue business. So.
And what's been going on with your customers? Has that been dropping too?
Over the past several years, Netflix and Redbox and some other technological innovations have taken away the mainstream part of our business.
In Redbox, these are those vending machines where you can rent a DV right from the machine.
That's exactly right.
And this is where Lance Smith comes in. Mr. Smith, you were, I gather, a customer of Tim Huffman's. What's special about his store?
It's got a really funky feel to it. There's always his two dogs are always here. And he's got paintings of movie reels on the floor, and it's a really old space. And, you know, a lot of what's special about it is Tim, quite honestly. He's sort of a local warehouse of knowledge concerning movies, and he really helps out.
And when you heard that Tim was going out of business, you went in and started talking about a loan.
Actually, I was renting a movie, and I heard him talking to another customer, about the fact he was going out of the business. I approached him after watching four or five other people come along and give him a hug and say they really wish something could work out.
And what made you decide that maybe you could help here?
Well, initially I thought Tim is a person that I could work with and would enjoy working with. And we basically figured it out over fish burritos at lunch.
And you have come up with a loan for the business. Do you think actually you will get your money back, or is this a generous gesture on your part?
No, I'm not a philanthropist. I'm a business person, and I definitely expect to recoup my capital and make a profit.
And how do you think you're going to turn it around if it's been sort of struggling up till now? Does there need to be a different business model there?
Well, I think in normal times, Tim would be able to go to the bank and get a short-term loan or line of credit, and he would be able to restructure things himself. But given the state of the economy, I recently went to the bank myself to work on a big deal that I was trying to do, and the bank is not loaning money the way the bank used to loan money. So that wasn't an option for Tim. And yes, I think we'll be able to bring it back to a positive cash flow by some basic changes in some of the operating procedures, cash flow procedures, and definitely some inventory updating.
Tim Huffman, now that you have this loan, you think you can get back on your feet. What are you thinking going forward?
Well, one of the things I was struck with when I closed it was how disappointed and saddened and just sort of a wailing and gnashing of teeth in the community about the Crystal Video closing. And I think maybe I had lost sight of that, you know, struggling with the books for the past several years and sort of watching revenues decrease. I had begun to think the community had abandoned us in a way. And so there was a lot of community concern about it closing, and Lance was sort of the instrument to that concern in approaching me with some financial restructuring. So I kind of have faith that the community is going to support us and kind of count on the town.
Hope the town doesn't let you down.
I don't think they will.
Well, Tim Huffman and Lance Smith, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
Thank you.
That's Tim Huffman, the owner of Crystal Video in Missoula, Montana, and Lance Smith, the customer who bailed him out with a loan.
You can hear these stories and more on our website, npr.org/movies.